All right, we are wrapping up a sermon series called Winning the War in Your Mind. And this is a guy. Did something just change? Are you guys messing with me? I was like, there's a reflection somewhere. Anyway, so this guy is a guy who was mightily used by God. And he is testifying before the United States Senate about how God mightily used him. Now, you don't know who he is yet. Maybe you do. If you do, you're a serious church nerd. But you will. But I want to ask you, as you look at his expression, and you look at that's his wife next to him, how do you think that experience went for him? What emotions is he feeling right now? I heard frustrated. What is it? Grief? Distraught? I can't spell that word, so I don't use it, but that's good. Yeah. What is it? Annoyed? Yeah. Yeah, well, okay, so he's talking to the Senate. What do you expect, right? No, but you notice what I'd heard? I heard all negative emotions. I didn't hear a single positive emotion. And this is a guy who God used mightily, describing his experiences. Don't you think that if God uses you mightily, you should have joy and just be so overwhelmingly happy and peaceful and all that? Anybody know who this is? Good. All right, I picked one that nobody knows. This is Richard Wurmbrand. Does that ring a bell? How many people have heard of Voice of the Martyrs? All right, all five of you then know who Richard Wurmbrand is. He's the guy who founded this. Let me tell you a little bit about his story. Richard Wurmbrand was born and raised in Romania. He was born before World War II, and he was raised as an atheist. And get this, he came to Christ because of a traveling carpenter that came through his town. Right? So this traveling carpenter told Richard the gospel. He just fell head over heels in love so much so that he became a pastor. And he was a pastor throughout that World War II era. And at the end of that era, anybody know what happened to the country of Romania in 1945? Went to communism. The Soviet bloc rolled in. And, of course, communism is very favorable towards Christianity. did my sarcasm meter just peg there? Right? So Richard Wurmbrand in 1945 stood up in front of his entire country and said, Christ is the answer. We cannot abandon the local church. We cannot turn our backs on Christ because he wouldn't do that to us. So you can imagine how that went. He was imprisoned. He was tortured. I mean, literally tortured for 5 years. And they said, okay, buddy, look, we're going to let you out if you promise to never talk about Jesus again. You know what he said? Can't do it. I got to talk about him. Say, okay, well, we're going to try this. We're going to let you go, and we'll see how it goes. Guess what he did? He talked about Jesus. And guess what happened? Right back into prison, this time for 7 years. So now we're talking 12 years. And I'm not talking a nice, clean prison cell with 3 squares a day and the workout, you know, where you can work out all day and you can watch TV. I'm talking Romanian, actually, at that time, Soviet bloc cell. Like, the worst. He spent 3 years in isolation. I can't spend 5 minutes in isolation. It just, right? 3 years in isolation. And so he had the actual physical signs of torture. This was the Senate hearing where he finally, I'll tell you the rest of his story later, but he eventually got his way to the United States. He's testifying before the United States Senate about persecution of Christians around the world. And during this testimony, I don't have a picture of this, he actually stood up and took off his shirt to show the scars of persecution. Probably not a dry eye in the audience, right? So this is a guy who God used mightily. Now, you may not be in a prison cell like Richard Wurmbrand, but I bet you're in some form of captivity. And the reason I say that is I'm looking at statistics, and you might fit one of these bills. No pun intended. But you got the mom, right? Now, I know what you're going to say. Bill, this is so sexist. This is so stereotypical. No, I'm getting this from research. This isn't me. I'm also getting this from personal experience from people that I talk to, moms. You feel responsible for everything. You're bearing the weight of the world on your shoulders. Because not only do you have to get the kids ready for school, you have to take care of the household, you have to do your job. It always cracks me up when you meet a mom and say, oh, do you work? Do I not work? Come on, have you been a mom? Right? You're always working. There is no time off for you. So you're feeling overwhelmed, you're feeling pressed. That can feel like captivity. That can feel like a cell. Teens getting ready to go back to school, worried about fitting in. What do I have to do to be part of the in crowd? I'm not looking right at you, but I am looking at you, right? Yeah, and so there's a lot of peer pressure. How do I fit in? How do I fit in and yet still follow Jesus? Is that even possible? Are they gonna think I'm a nerd? Are they think I'm a goody two-shoes and I don't get invited to the fun stuff? And so you're worried about being accepted. Dads, you're the provider, right? And you're probably up at night thinking, good grief, man, there's braces, there's sports, there's college, there's car payments, there's insurance, there's medical. How am I ever going to provide? And am I doing a good job? You're stressed because you're looking at all the bills coming up and wondering, how in the world am I going to make this work? And you're feeling the weight of that on you. Now, if you're not feeling any of that and you're one of those categories, you're an anomaly to the statistics, to the research. I have a feeling that there's something. If it's not that, there's something that is weighing you down, making you feel captive. Good news. We're going to overcome that. And we're going to do it together. Because here's the thing. Many of us wait for the circumstances to change. This is a cool picture that I found. It's like, okay, they're at home, they're doing their thing, but they feel like they're in prison. And many of us associate the following of Christ like, okay, when circumstances get better, I won't feel so captive. I won't feel so burdened. But is that really true? Is it the circumstances that need to change? Or is it our mindset that needs to change? Well, we're going to look at some examples. We're going to look at Paul. We're going to look at Richard Wurmbrand. And we're going to look at you. And I'm not going to try to meddle too much in your lives, but I'm going to ask some serious questions that I want you to reflect on today. The setting that we're talking about is this war that goes on. It's the physical world, the spirit versus the flesh, right? So you got the spiritual side, you got the flesh side. That's constantly at war. And the expectations that we set in one directly affect the other. The problem is that we usually enter this equation from the flesh side. We enter in from the worldly side. What are my cares and concerns? I'm going to take that over to the spiritual side. Then we've got it backwards. We need to enter from the spiritual side and take that into the cares and concerns of the world. And if we can get the cart before the horse, we'll have a whole different mindset. Will your problems go away? No. Will your mindset change? Yes. Will it look different? Will you look different? Yes, you will. So let's get into the scripture, Romans 8, 5, and 6. This is Paul writing to the church, the Romans, literally. And he is asking some very good questions throughout the chapter. I encourage you to read the rest of the chapter. It's very enlightening, as Paul always is. But for today, I just want you to ask this question as we go through the rest of the service. Where is your mindset taking you? Where is your mindset taking you? There's a saying in sports, where the head goes, the body must follow. If you wrestled, if you did diving, if you do jiu-jitsu, you know where the head goes, the body is going to follow. The spiritual equivalent is where your mind goes, your soul follows. Where is your mindset taking you? Listen to these words from Paul. Those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on what the flesh desires. But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. The mind governed by the flesh is death, but the mind governed by the Spirit is life and peace. The mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. These are the words of God for the people of God, and for these words we are grateful. Did you hear the war? It's the spirit versus the flesh. Let's unpack that just a little bit here, because it's important that we understand there is a war. And if you don't know that there's a war, guess what? You're already losing. That's the epitome of skill. A guy named Sun Tzu wrote a book called Art of War. He said, the best of all, the pinnacle of success, is to wage warfare against an enemy who doesn't even know they're fighting. We're fighting. We need to fight. And the fight is against the flesh versus the spirit. So let's define these for just a second. The flesh is definitely the default. All right, so let me come back to that in a second. It's self-led life. Like, I'm in charge, I'm the master, I'm captain of my ship, master of my own destiny. And this is what culture encourages. This is a sign of success. If you're captain of your ship, man, you're somebody. But you're also led by the flesh. This is self-led life. And the result is usually anxiety. Now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but I'm going to ask you to evaluate how much of your life is self-led versus God-led. And once you get a scale of 1 to 10 there and you compare, like, oh, I'm about, you know, an 8 on the scale of self-led, I'm 80% self-led, then I want you to do this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much anxiety do you experience every day? And I'll bet there's a direct correlation. High self-led, high anxiety. There's also a different way. Now, the other one is the Spirit. This is a choice. We have to choose to live by the Spirit. And if we do, that is a God-led life, and the result is peace. So you can flip that scale. If you don't want to do the first survey, do the other one. On a scale of 1 to 10, how God-led are you? And I will guarantee that if you're highly God-led, you also experience a high sense of peace. Back to this idea of flesh being the default. Is that accurate, Bill? I thought you were a pastor. Don't you know that that's not the default? Actually, it is. It's not supposed to be, but it is. If you were here a couple weeks ago, I used the analogy of a computer. We have the perfect hard drive. We're created in the image of God. Our structure is great. The problem is our software. See, we had the perfect program when we got loaded, when we came out of the factory. And then this little virus, it was the Apple. Can I get sued for that? The Apple started it all. We had the virus, and now we're running an operating system that makes this not our default to be led by the Spirit. The operating system is called original sin. It causes us to turn away from God and try to do it all ourselves. And so what we need is a healthy dose of that antivirus to run through and restore what should be the natural thing, and that is to be led by God. Now, that takes surrender. That's not a popular word. It takes giving ourselves up to someone else's leadership. That doesn't sound like the person that society says we should be. We should be captain of our own ship. Or should we? This is the war that's going on. So what do we do with this? How do we take this from the flesh? Because remember I said we often enter from the flesh side and then we try to address it with the spirit. How do we take it and enter from the spirit side to address the fleshly concerns? 3 steps. And that's not it. Sorry, fat fingered the button the wrong way. That was me, not you. All right. So the first thing, do what you can do. All right. So some people, you know, if they get this idea that God is going to fix everything when Jesus comes into my life, I no longer have any problems and life is so good. And they just say, okay, well, Jesus is going to fix that. And they don't do anything. Also, if you have a medical diagnosis and you can do something about it, do that. Change your diet. Change your exercise. Do whatever it is. Consult with all the experts. Do something. If you've lost your job, maybe God is going to provide. But do something. Network with people. Ask other people, how did you handle that when you lost your job? What did you go through? What did you experience? Who did you network with? How did you get through that? And by the way, if you have a job and you know someone that's lost a job, what a ministry opportunity. Because you've been there. You can reach out to someone and help them. So God uses our experiences sometimes in the most powerful ways, in the most powerful ministries, if we'll let him. Do what you can do. If you're trying to be accepted in high school as a teenager, I don't know, maybe shower every day, you know? that's a good start, right? Or at least once a week. I mean, come on, right? Try not to be... What, water conservation isn't a thing? So do something. Do what you can do, but don't do more than you need to do. In other words, give God what I can't do. I can't control how other people react. I can't control if my body has a disease right away. I can't just make it go away. Believe me, I've tried. I can't control the job market. I can't control what kind of people are in school. I can control the ones I hang around with. but I can't control who's around me. I can't control that. So stop using energy in a place that has zero rate of return. If you were investing, would you invest your money into a stock that had zero rate of return and in fact was maybe even a negative return? Of course not. So why do we invest our energy in things that have a zero or negative rate of return? I don't know. We're not that bright. Whatever, you can figure it out, but give God what you can't do and stop wasting energy. A couple of techniques I'll recommend for this. One, I had a God box at one point, and the God box was when things were too big for me to handle, I would write it down. This was in the day of 3x5 note cards. I don't think Post-its had been invented yet. I'm kidding. But I would write it down, and if it was too big for me to handle, I would put it in the God box. And anytime I thought about that, I would take that back out of the God box and look at it and go, yep, still can't deal with it. Put it right back in. Now, it didn't go away. I knew it was still there, but I also, that was a physical act of me giving that to God because there's only so much I can do. And my prayer every time I took it back out was to say, okay, if there's something that I can do here, would you reveal that to me? And maybe it's just a little step. Maybe it's not solving the entire problem, but it's one step on the way. And then you put it back and you keep that process. You know what I found is that over time, that wasn't even a thing anymore. I made it this big deal. It's like when the little mouse crawls next to the nightlight, but you don't see the mouse, you see the shadow on the wall. It looks like Godzilla, right? It looked horrible. It looked like it was just going to be the end of the world for me. But it wasn't. It, in essence, was nothing at the end of the day. I put it in the God box. Let God have it. The other thing I would encourage you to do is when you talk about rooting yourself, you know, we often talk about rooting ourselves in principles and values, and that's not a bad thing. That's not wrong. But whose principles? Whose values? See, that's where I think we get it backwards. We talk about the great Greco-Roman society that we've built. The roots are Greco-Roman. They prized philosophers and wisdom. Again, not bad things, but whose wisdom? Whose philosophy? And so a lot of that is human-oriented, so the smarter and stronger we can be, the more stoic we can be. Again, we're entering the problem from the flesh side and trying to take it to the spirit. But if we come back to God and we enter from the spirit side and that flows into our life, it looks entirely different. Here's what I mean. I'm going to use my pointer. So you can use a pen, you can use a toothpick. I love things that you can take with you and illustrate to other people. Because this is what the world will tell us. If you're trying to be strong, you need to root yourself in the strength that is the wisdom of this world. You need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You need to have willpower and determination so that when those winds come, you strain, you stand strong. And at the end of the day, you're still standing. But I'll tell you what, there's things out there that are more powerful than you. And that's not a slight on you. That's just a fact of life. If you don't believe me, drive by a cemetery sometime. There's things that are more powerful that we can't handle. There's life situations that you can't handle. And again, not a slight on you. This is the world, the fallen, broken world, the bad operating system that we live in. And at some point, you're going to get uprooted. How do you get back upright when that happens? Your roots are exposed. Your tree is down. And it's a matter of willpower, and maybe somebody else comes along and tries to prop you back up, but it's never going to quite be the same until you try to get those roots again, right? That's using the flesh and taking it to the spirit. What if we went to the spirit and took it to the flesh? Behold. Oh. What if we're rooted in the spirit? The roots are up here. They're not affected by anything in this world. The cool thing about this is as the winds blow and they will pass, you come right back to center, right where you were made to be. And no matter how strong it is, it's not stronger than this grip because this grip is not mine. This grip is God's. Tell me one thing that can separate us from the love of God. Anybody? I heard it in the same book that we read. There is nothing that can separate us. This grip is sure, and when that thing passes, you're right back to center, right back to where you were meant to be in the right relationship with God. You can use that demo with a pencil, a pen, a toothpick, a pointer, whatever you've got. But don't forget, when we root ourselves in God, we remain centered no matter what. It's His grip, not my grip. That gives me a great deal of confidence. Now, does that change the circumstances? No, the winds are blowing. Man, I'm getting battered all around here, but I have the assurance that I am rooted in something that will never let me go, and I have the assurance that I will land in the right place. No matter what it looks like right now, it doesn't matter. I'm not looking at the world. I'm looking at God. That's entering from the Spirit and approaching the world. I hope that we can do that. Give God what I can't do. And then trust God, no matter what. I know that's a trite thing to say, just trust God. No, I got to ask you, honestly, is God trustworthy? Yeah, he is. Now, those of you who have more trips around the sun have had more opportunities to trust him, right? But here's the thing. If you ever doubt, is God trustworthy? Ask yourself this. Has God ever done something that he said he wouldn't do? Or if you don't like that question, flip it around. Has God ever not done something he said he would do? And I go back to where people think that the circumstances should determine our happiness. Well, if I follow Jesus, I should have no trouble. What did Jesus say about trouble? You will have trouble. You live in a fallen, broken world. He knows that. This isn't our home. But we're here. And while we're here, we have the opportunity to spread good news to everybody around us. And we should. Trust God, no matter what, because he's trustworthy. There's never been a time, there's been many times where I question God. Like, Bill, you're a pastor. I know. I just learned how to question him more deeply. I can question him in Greek, and it makes no difference, right? I still question God, but I trust God. That's the difference. See, we have this feeling like, I should understand everything. I want to know the answer why to every question that I have. God, why did you do that to me? Why did you allow this to happen? Why did I lose my job here? Why did you give me that disease? Why? How many people have ever successfully answered that why question to every question that you have about your life? Yeah, me either. I don't understand why all the time. But as I look back on life, you have more trips around the sun, you have an opportunity to look back, you can see the hand of God moving in things that have happened. You can see where, no matter how bad it looked, God was able to take that and steer that in a direction if we're willing to follow, if we're willing to put God first, if we're willing to enter those problems from the Spirit first, God will lead, and he can work all things together for the good. It's absolutely amazing to look back now, and I can say that now because I've got a few more trips around the sun. But I'll tell you, there's a time, and there's still times, where I'm very perplexed. I have a whole list of questions that when I get to heaven, I'm going to need a terabyte of something of storage, right? I don't even know what those words are. It's really big. I got lots of questions. But the thing is, I don't have to understand God fully to trust him, because he has proven to be trustworthy. We talked a few weeks ago about the Sabbath, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. It's not just that you remember to rest in God. It's that you remember what God has done, and that sense of trust allows you to have peace, because God has been trustworthy ever since there has been recorded human history, and before that, and guess what? After that as well. That's the God that we serve. So, does it change your circumstances? No, but it will change your perspective and your mindset. So the mom that everything depends on surrenders control for that day. I know that sounds scary. That sounds so scary. You don't surrender it to your kids. Note, please make that caveat. You surrender it to God and let God work through you. And I will tell you that it goes quick. Like you think, these kids are all that. It goes quick. And before you know it, they're headed off to college. Before you know it, they're driving a car. Before you know it, they're asking if they can spend the night at somebody that you've never met before. I'm working my way back. And it just keeps on going. It goes quicker than you think, so be present at that moment, because it's precious. Absolutely precious. Let God take control. Teens, if you're trying to fit in, don't do whatever the world says you need to do to fit in, especially if you're hanging around some people that you don't really know that well or that are questionable. If you're trying to fit in, I want you to hear this. Everybody, I want you to hear this. If you're trying to fit in, understand this. You're already accepted. And who has accepted you? Are you worried about, you know, Bobby or whoever at school accepting you? Or are you thinking, you know, the creator of the universe and his son, Jesus Christ, accept me? Not E-X-cept me, A-C-C, accept me. You're royalty. You ever thought about that? If Jesus Christ accepts you, you're the son of a, you're the daughter or son of a king. Compare that to anybody else at your school. What, are you the daughter or son of a king? Actually, if they believe, they are. But that's beside the point. If they believe, hopefully they're not being a knucklehead to you, right? Because then there's other discussions to have. But you are already accepted. You don't have to do anything else to be accepted by Jesus. You already are. And you are royalty. I need you to hear that. Because other people are going to try and pull you in and say, well, you're not cool if you don't do this. Say, I'm pretty cool. I'm royalty. I bet my dad can beat up your dad. And men, this is a hard one because you feel the burden of providing, but who is the ultimate provider? There we go. There's another softball across the plate, right? Yeah, Jesus, God is going to be the provider. He always is the provider. His timeline is terrible compared to mine, and that's my biggest complaint. God, please do it on my timeline. And he's like, nah, you got to wait for it. I don't want to wait for it. See, that's the lesson I need you to learn. And he'll put you right where he needs you. He'll take you through things. And if you continue to focus on him, you will learn amazing things. You will be transformed. And I say that as one who's had a few more chips around the sun. I understand that. But do you trust him? Will you lean into him? Will you stay focused on him? If you will, the transformation will be amazing. Or your money back. So back to Richard Wurmbrand. This is his testimony. He's breaking down. He's literally sobbing. And his wife is trying to console him. But here's the thing. I want to share a quote that he said after this. He says, it was in prison where we found the deepest joy. We were like candles burning in the darkness. See, he witnessed to every guard that he had, much like Paul did when he was in prison. He came out of that experience, and here's the thing. It doesn't matter what happens. What matters is how do we deal with it? How do we recenter with what happens? Richard Wurmbrand never let go of this relationship. God never let go of him. And when he came out the other end of that, at the end of that second period of prison, when he refused to stop talking about Jesus, some Christians in Norway heard about him, and they raised money to buy him. Literally, they paid the Romanian government, say, we'll take him off your hands. And they're like, good riddance, and thanks for the cash. So he went to Norway and then came to the United States. He founded Voice of the Martyrs, which is still in existence today. It affects over 70 countries and spreads the story of people who are persecuted for Christ. He wrote a book. You can read it, Tortured for Christ by Richard Wurmbrand. If you want to hear his whole story, read about it. It's amazing. He's written that in several different languages. It's affected several, 1,000 people around the world in 70-plus countries. Why? Because he refused to do anything but be rooted in God. He didn't live in the flesh. He lived in the spirit. And no matter where his flesh was, it was a spirit that governed everything that he interpreted and did with his life. That power is possible for us as well. So just to sum this all up, Richard Wurmbrand, worm, could it be a coincidence? I don't know. Worm is the tactic that we started. If you want to hear the other two sermons in this series, we use this tactic. This is a tactic used by the Navy SEALs to keep their minds sharp and focused under times of stress. This is a mind that is resilient and adaptive. You witness. We talked about how to do that. You stop the bad thought, the thought that's leading you astray. If your head's going somewhere and you don't want your body to follow, you got to stop it first. Then you have to redirect it. That was last week. Now you got to maintain it. That's this week. Be rooted in Christ. That's how you maintain it. And if you want to hear all the rest of this, go back and look at our website or look at YouTube. It still says WordServe YouTube. We're working on that. But you can find it all there. Because there is a way to do this. That's the first thing I need you to hear today. It seems impossible. There's a way to do this. But it depends on using the truth. And I mean the truth with a capital T, not substitute truth, not pop psychology, not somebody's good idea, not Uncle Bob's old time-tested stoic philosophy. I'm talking about the truth. And if you will do that, you will find a life that is amazing. Regardless of the circumstances around you, regardless of what's happening to you, around you, or through you, you can find peace in a God-led way of living. How do I know this? Because someone summed it up very nicely when he said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father but by me." There is a way. It depends on truth. It will give you life. His name is Jesus. Will you pray with me, please? God, thank you for your Son, Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life. Remind us, God, that Jesus didn't say that he was a way or a truth or a life. He is the way, truth, and life. God, as we go out of here, there's so many things that draw on our attention, so many expectations, so many responsibilities. They weigh heavy, but God, I pray that you would help us to lay them down at your feet this morning. I pray that you would help us to re-thread our heads so that we come at our problems from the Spirit into the world, not to the world and back to the Spirit. The enemy has corrupted us. He's got us thinking backwards. Help us to think right today. Help us to accept that there is a grip that will never let us go. Help us to live fully into that and stop fighting you for control. In other words, help us surrender, God. Help us to experience the fruit of peace, of calmness, that's not dependent on what's happening around us, but rather what's happening inside us. Pour out your Holy Spirit. Make that happen inside us right now. And help us to be a witness to what you are as you represent peace to this world. And we pray this for your glory, for your honor, and your praise. In Jesus' name.